Y'all ready for this? The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, the only show of its kind. You can call us and ask us a question on any legal subject. We are injury attorneys, but we bring this show to you to answer your questions, solve your problems on any legal subject. 303-713-8255. That's 713-8255. We'll be glad to answer your questions. Today's show on KOA at 10 o'clock, it's an hour-long injury show, is on truckers, trucking accidents. What do you need to know? What kind of evidence do you need to have? What happens on the scene of an accident? How the insurance companies for these trucking companies are all over these from the very, very beginning. And I don't think a lot of people realize that when you have a trucking accident, obviously it's very devastating. We always all realize that. But many times, if possible, the insurance company for these truckers and trucking companies get their team on the scene of the accident. You know what the team is? The team involves on the scene of the accident. The team includes attorneys, accident reconstructionists, engineers, human factors experts, adjusters, experts with regard to the truck standard of care experts, a team. Another thing that you're going to learn in our show today at 10 o'clock is many times, and we've seen it many times, the trucker who causes this collision, these people are a very devastating, catastrophic situation, doesn't even get out of the truck to go see how they are. A lot of truckers are instructed, and they do, sit in the tractor and call the home office. Not all of them. There's some good truck drivers out there. But we've seen it time and time. Why do they call the home office? Why do they call dispatch? And they say, well, I've just had an accident. What do I do? And there it starts. The defense of this accident, this crash, this catastrophic event starts right there, and then the team comes out. That's today at 10 o'clock on KOA, one-hour show. We do a one-hour show every week, 10 to 11, a different injury subject. And we've covered a lot of subjects already, and we're going to continue to do that. Okay, right before the Supreme Court, we try to bring you a case that's of interest. We got McCoy versus Louisiana. Fascinating case argued just recently before the United States Supreme Court. So you make yourself the Supreme Court justice and see what you would do. So McCoy was charged with three counts of murder in Louisiana. He said he had an alibi. He said he was in Texas, despite an eyewitness's testimony saying he was there at the scene. He didn't want to plead guilty. There's a death penalty in Louisiana. He wanted to avoid that. He didn't want to plead guilty. His lawyer, English, thought that what he should do in trial, was to tell the jury or concede that McCoy was guilty, concede he was guilty of three murder counts, and then tell him that he was crazy, and the pressure couldn't prove intent. So, Brad, let's talk about this case, because the arguments before the United States Supreme Court were absolutely fascinating.
Well, yeah, the reason that he wanted to do this, the attorney, was in order to avoid the death penalty. He thought if there was an admission and said he was crazy, he'd avoid the death penalty. Why McCoy wanted to insist that he didn't do the crime to begin with, and therefore he was innocent. McCoy asked that his attorney be dismissed prior to the case starting. The judge denied that. So next thing you know, the jury comes back with the death penalty anyway, and McCoy takes it up to the Louisiana Supreme Court, and his appeal is denied. So next thing you know, he's in the United States Supreme Court. And the question comes up is, does the attorney have to follow your directions and do exactly what is said by the defense attorney, or does the attorney, by the defendant, or does the defense attorney have some kind of discretion to do what he thinks is proper and appropriate for his client?
I mean, we're not talking about a shoplifting case here. We're talking about three murder counts. It was his estranged wife's wife, parent, son. And so three counts of murder, and he doesn't want to concede or admit guilty. His attorney does. His attorney thinks his best shot at this is to concede guilty, but they can't prove intent because he was crazy beyond all belief. And, of course, the jury found him to be guilty, and the death sentence was imposed. Which brings up another thing. When you're in a criminal case, and there was all constitutional arguments on this case. It's absolutely fascinating. They said that the Constitution prohibits a criminal defense lawyer from making the decisions. And if the defendant wants to make decisions not to plead guilty, they have the right to do so. We've all heard that. Now, Fifth Amendment rights. Fascinating. Fifth Amendment rights. You've always heard it. You don't have to testify to incriminate yourself. So when you're going to testify, let's talk about that. When you're a criminal defendant and you're going to testify, and you tell the trial judge you're going to testify in your own criminal case and you don't have to, what happens? Well, the judge gets the jury out of the courtroom, and the judge has an advisement called a Curtis advisement in Colorado, an advisement to the defendant. It is the defendant's choice whether or not he or she's going to testify.
Sole and complete choice. I mean, the advisement is to the defendant. Look, you are making this choice free and from any and all advice given to you by your attorney, regardless what your attorney says. If your attorney says to testify or not testify, you're making this decision. And the failure to do that can be a prosecutorial, I mean, I'm sorry, it can be misconduct by the defendant, the attorney. It can be it can lead to a mistrial. The Curtis advisement has to be given, and the defendant has to make that decision on his or her own. So it's confusing how we can have an issue as to whether or not a defendant can make the decision of whether to plead guilty or not guilty, or whether to maintain innocence or not maintain innocence, and whether an attorney can act contrary to his client's instructions on such a vital element.
So that's before the United States Supreme Court. A corollary to that is the Fifth Amendment decision to testify, and there's a corollary to that. And also, so there's an advisement given by the judge, the court, to the defendant. You understand you're going to testify. You understand you have the right not to testify. And by the way, when a defendant doesn't testify at all and they sit there at defense table, the prosecutor can't mention that and can't bring that up to the jury by saying something like, we have been in this trial for 4 days. We've been in trial for 8 days. And the defendant has yet to even tell his story or her story. Can't be done because that violates the Fifth Amendment right not to testify. Fascinating law. And so the McCoy case, we'll wait to see what the decision's going to be. But if the defendant has to have a separate advisement, and if it's the defendant's decision to testify or not to testify, why isn't it the defendant's decision to say, I'm not guilty? Why would his attorney say, well, I'm going to concede your guilt. No, you're not. Yes, I am. No, you're not. And the attorney does it anyway. Two murder counts, three counts of murder. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. You can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. It's an information loaded website. Any of our books are there for free. You can download our books. Our Denver Post blog tomorrow morning is on Hit and Run. We have a book called Cowards of the Street. Hit and Run. If you're involved in Hit and Run, we're going to advise you what to do. And we'll get to your calls right after the break. We appreciate all of your calls. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Here we go. The only show of its kind. You can call us, and we will answer your legal questions on any legal subject, 303-713-8255. And in the mountains, you can call us at 970-457-1009. That's 457-1009. Join us live is Sam from Golden. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you doing?
What can we do for you?
A question about the proper level of insurance or whatever measures taken a landlord should consider if he perceives or she perceives that there could be a less than perfect situation as far as a dangerous scenario. This just relates to stairs on a rental house.
Stairs?
Stairs that are, yeah. Like, let's say, non-conforming, that it's not real practical to do something about as far as changing them.
Right.
So... what's the tenant's ultimate duty of assessment? Say they have the child gets injured. What's the landlord's protection that they should have had in place? Obviously insurance. And what level of insurance makes sense?
Okay, sure. So, yes, absolutely have to have liability insurance. And so that has to cover the premises. It has to cover the acts or activities on the premises, somebody walking up on the sidewalk, somebody in the house falling down the stairs. But since we're dealing with land and we're dealing with premises, it doesn't matter if it's a landlord-tenant, it doesn't matter if it's a shopping mall or a condo or a townhome or a house, it deals with premises liability. And the basic tenet of premises liability is that one has to prove that there's a dangerous condition. A dangerous condition. So if you just fall down the stairs because you're clumsy, that's not a dangerous condition. If the stairs are misdesigned, for example, or not up to code, then that can be a dangerous condition. So bottom line, to start with, yes, you got to have insurance. And then the amount, it depends, because there's a cap in Colorado on non-economic damages. Brad, your take on this?
Well, when you're talking about the liability that's going on, we have to remember that the statute we have in Colorado says that the requirement to maintain the premises in a safe condition is a non-delegable duty. So the property owner, along with the occupant of the property, being the tenant, they both have the responsibility as, quote, landowners, and they're both going to be defined as landowners, to maintain the property and guard against any dangerous conditions. It's a non-delegable duty. It extends in different degrees, as Gary was saying, to whether you're an invitee or a guest, or which is known as a licensee, or whether or not you're a trespasser. So when you say what kind of insurance, if you have some kind of unique situation with your property, and let's say that unique situation is, you know, steps, or the steps aren't safe for some reason, that duty falls on both the landlord and the tenant initially to guard against that causing an injury to anybody. Once you're the landlord and you've got a tenant in the property and the tenant is aware of the defective condition, the tenant probably has lost any and all rights to carry out a claim against the landlord at that point, because the tenant at that point understands and knows that there's a dangerous condition and they're on notice. But you know, when you talk about insurance, if I'm representing the tenant and he calls me up or she calls me up and says, I've got this defective condition on the property, it can't be remedied, it's a unique way that the steps are built, or it's a unique way that the driveway's put in or whatever, the first thing I'm telling him is, you get insurance for yourself to make sure that if anybody you bring into your house, a social guest that's going to be known probably as a licensee at that point, knows and is aware of, has protection for their injuries. Because I think at that point the tenant's going to have liability. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but...
Yeah, somewhat. This is a rental house scenario.
Right.
Upstairs, upstairs, downstairs, basement. You've seen before, older houses weren't necessarily made nothing close to today's code. The stairs are cement. There is a handrail. Overhead hang is low. And I was thinking, I think I might have med pay of something of like around $5,000 for, as a landlord owning the property. And I wondered if you could buy medical insurance, because primarily that's a concern that someone, if they fell and got injured, would have a claim and could be supported by saying, well, the stairs weren't built right. And because it was reasonably impractical to change it, I wondered if there's a level of insurance that, or type, or what's the right kind of insurance to ask for that would protect someone, landlord in this case. Ultimate protection, I would suggest, is that the property's held in the name of an LLC, and they want to confirm if that's it. That would be the maximum claim, is that if they want a large lawsuit to get the property, and that's it? Or is there more beyond that to be worried about?
Well, you made an interesting point, because if you get an LLC, and that's the way a lot of people do it, then that company is the only entity that's responsible and liable, and the property is the only asset, basically, in the LLC. So yes, that's the preferred way to do it as far as setting it up. But as insurance is concerned, in Colorado, there's a cap on non-economic losses. You're asking how much insurance. And so it changes every year with an index by the Colorado Secretary of State. Bottom line is you probably should get at least $500,000 of insurance to $1 million of insurance, liability insurance. Keep in mind, if somebody's injured on the premises, it obviously depends on the injury, but you have to prove liability first. Like I said, if somebody trips down the stairs because they're clumsy, they have balance problems, they shouldn't be on the stairs to begin with, the insurance company is going to fight that. if somebody leaves something on the steps like a hammer and they don't know it, and that might could be a dangerous condition. So, but bottom line, insurance, I think in this day and age, you have to have at least $500,000 to $1 million of insurance. And depending on the injury, that might not even be enough. Most cases probably would fall within that, Sam.
Of course, we have insurance, but what would be the correct term? Is there a medical liability insurance? Because that, to me, would be the biggest threat. Is that someone, like a kid, or even a friend comes over, the friend doesn't know anything about these stairs. The tenants are used to it. The friend's not.
Sure.
If the kid falls down and gets hurt badly, what would be the proper choice of words to use when talking to the insurance agent?
Okay.
My insurance.
Yeah, you were talking about MedPay, and that usually applies to car insurance, but that's a good term. I mean, you can say I want to buy insurance that includes medical payments for medical bills, payments to the people for medical bills if they become injured,
and liability coverage,
and liability coverage.
Used for liability, and I would say I want it for any potential. I don't think you admit. I'd say for potential defective conditions on the property, the fact that you have a low entry into the basement probably isn't considered really a defective condition, but I would be saying I want anything for claims of defective conditions. But medical insurance or MedPay for your real estate property insurance is a proper term. Yeah, I would use it.
But let's keep in mind this, Sam. When you got in a car accident, MedPay pays regardless of fault, and it just pays for the medical bills, period, regardless of fault. When you have sort of a MedPay provision or a provision in your homeowner's or policy, it doesn't necessarily pay regardless of fault, and fault has to be proved, and they don't necessarily pay medical bills as you go. So let's say somebody was on the premises, they got injured, a kid was there, they got injured. The insurance company for that property may not pay the medical bills as they go. May pay at the end if they settle, if there's liability, and if the injured person can prove it. So it's a little bit different flavor with regard to property. And as a side note, most big box companies, big box companies, they pay medical bills, and they always issue a letter that says we're going to pay you $5,000 in medical bills just because they kind of write it and do it, and sometimes they pay it out of their pocket. But you being in a piece of property, a home like that, different ballgame.
But Sam, when you talk to your insurance person, that's exactly what you want to do. You can go down to certain stores in certain places right now that have medical insurance of, they say, $5,000, and they pay the first $5,000. And they'll pay that medical insurance. And then you have to prove that there's more liability or there's a reason why they should pay more for your injuries.
If I could jump in, tell a court case settles and finds fault, they're not going to write a check. The tenant would be out paying their own bills. Hopefully they have health insurance, this kind of thing. But I was just looking at the whopper. If somebody got really badly hurt, there's a guard, there's a handrail. Okay, the overhang's low, but the steps themselves are irregularly formed.
Right.
The height is different. And so that's not reasonably corrected without tearing everything out. It would be a big thing to do.
Okay, so Sam, they're not going to pay us the medical bills as they go. So they hope they have the health insurance that they pay the medical bills as they go. Then they make the claim, and the payment of their medical bills is part of the liability part of the policy. So let's make up an example. You had $500,000 of liability coverage. Somebody got injured, and they had $100,000 of medical bills. The liability company for the home is they're not going to pay as they go. They're going to make the $100,000 medical bills at the end of the case. Maybe it went to trial. Maybe it settled. But that's going to be in a lump sum payment, and that's part of the claim.
Okay, so
I know what I'm asking. How about lawyers' costs that during this phase, the landlord would be sued and have to defend themselves by hiring a lawyer typically, and those costs add up fast. Is there insurance to be paying for that, or is that all out of pocket from the landlord's perspective?
So if the homeowner needs an attorney and has insurance, the insurance company will hire the attorney. The insurance company will pay the attorney. The insurance company will pay the settlement or the judgment.
Listen, one of the things I would do is build into your lease, based on this low overhead going in the basement, build into your lease the requirement that there be a sign of some type. It can be a nice sign for a home or whatever, but there be a sign of some type put on the steps where it's easily visible, watch out, or low overhead, or it gives some kind of notice. I would require that the tenants put that in, and I'd build it into the lease, so it's right there, so you're giving warning. I would get insurance for bodily injury. I'd get insurance, and this is an exclusive list, but I'd get insurance for bodily injury, and then I'd decide whether or not, by talking to my insurance person, whether or not I can afford some medical insurance for, you know, if somebody gets hurt on the property, the medical insurance is going to be there for $2,500 for any kind of care that's necessary. A lot of times they're not going to give you that. They're going to say the only time we're going to give you that is if the person is hurt as a result of the negligence of the landlord or the tenant. And then I build in to say the tenant needs to get insurance too for those same areas.
Absolutely. It has to go into the lease.
But consider medical, med pay, and bodily injury, and personal injury. I would consider those three when I talk to my insurance person.
Hey, Sam, thanks for the call.
Take care, guys.
All right.
And by the way,
that's
called third-party medical expenses when you're actually
talking. All right. We appreciate all your calls. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, 303-713-8255. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. All of our books are there, including books on hit and run, including books on Colorado car insurance, including books on legal game plan, and on and on. You can download a free copy on our website, championsofthepeople.com. We'll be right back. Legal Show, the only show of its kind. You can call us 303-713-8255. Join us now live is Eric from Caitlin's. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How you doing today, guys?
Good. Doing great.
What's cooking?
We got all kinds of things cooking. We're going to start up with some new specials for the next couple of weeks. That breakfast special we're going to showcase is going to be our Huevos Rancheros. Now, we're going to put two eggs on top of some corn, some golden-dipped corn tortillas, serve that up with our griddled hash browns, as always, and our homemade beans. You can always top that with our red or green chili made right here on the premises. And you can add our carne asada, which is the slow-roasted pork, or the carne asada on that, which is the marinated steak. That's going to be the special for the breakfast for the next couple of weeks. And then our lunch special is going to be our tuna melt sandwich. We sell a ton of those. We sell it on grilled multi-grain bread. We serve it with Swiss cheese, lettuce, tomato. As always, you can get our waffle-cut fries or our homemade chips. Both of those are really, really good. I'd recommend any one of those on the side. That's the lunch special for the next couple of weeks. And don't forget, guys, every Monday and every Friday from 11 to 2, it's an all-you-can-eat taco burrito buffet. It's all-you-can-eat. It actually includes a non-alcoholic beverage in the price. You simply can't beat that kind of a deal every Monday and Friday. We've got flat screens on. We've got craps and mimosas for $12.50. I think the weather might allow a few hours of decent weather for the deck to be open, so we're going to give that a shot. So there's tons of reasons to come down to Caitlin's. Scratch-made buttermilk pancakes, scratch-made red and green chili, all kinds of things to offer down here at Caitlin's today, guys.
Okay, Rick, where are you located?
We are 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, guys, that's one block east of Colorado Boulevard, and that's the Glendale Shopping Center. Come and check us out.
Sounds great, Eric. I'll be down there.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, 303-713-8255. We're talking to Eva now from Fort Collins. Good morning, Eva.
Oh, good morning. How are you fellas today?
Great. How are you?
How are you?
I'm okay. Thank you. Hey, I have a question. My grandson had a fender bender in the school parking lot, and he did not take care of it. And he lost his driver's license for a different reason, and he got a letter recently, I think it was for motor vehicle, saying that he had to pay the damage to that vehicle before he gets his license back. And it's been over a year now, and I'm thinking if the fella had uninsured motorist or if he had his own coverage, I'm worried that he might get paid twice. How could we prevent that?
Okay, Eva, so a couple of questions first. This parking lot accident, what did your grandson do? Hit a parked car? What did he do?
Yes, he sideswiped a pickup truck.
Parked car, nobody in it, correct?
Oh, right, exactly, yes.
Okay, so then, in essence, it was your grandson's fault?
Yeah, oh, yes.
No question about that. Okay, so then he had a driver's license at the time?
I I don't remember. It was a while ago. I know he didn't. I think he didn't have insurance, but I'm not sure about a driver's license.
Okay, so you're worried about this other person that the car got sideswiped being paid twice. That was your
right.
question?
Motor vehicle wants him to pay like $2,500. But, if it were me, I would have had it fixed by now with my insurance. How could we find out if, he just can't afford, $2,500. And I don't know if he ever will, and I feel bad for the guy, but it was his accident. He needs to take care of it. But I would prefer if he could pay the deductible if the man already had it fixed. And, it doesn't seem right that he would get paid twice.
Okay, well, Brad's going to jump here in a second. But first of all, your grandson didn't have any insurance on the car to pay for the property damage?
Well, actually, I had paid for the insurance because of another accident. He was he could not be covered by the insurance.
Okay. So he was an excluded driver.
Yeah, thank you for the word. Yes, he was excluded. Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, here's what goes on this. This is under the Financial Responsibility Act in Colorado. For people listening, it's 42-7-301. And what it is it says that if he causes an accident and causes damages, he's supposed to have insurance. If he doesn't, then he is subject to suspension. It sounds like he was suspended. And you have the name of the person whose car he hit, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So, and how long ago did this happen?
It was either a year, year and a half. Oh, and I might add that the fella took him to court and he won a default judgment.
Against who?
Against your grandson.
Against my grandson.
All right. So there's default judgment hanging out there. There's a judgment hanging out, right?
Right.
All right. Now we're talking. We need to know about the judgment because the judgment's going to have to show a satisfaction of judgment. All he's got to do is pay that judgment or satisfy the judgment. And that's what he's going to be able to do to show that he resolved and that he took care of the matter. So
right, to get his license back. But what about if the fella had already, what if he already had it fixed by his insurance and all he had to pay was deductible, then he would actually have what's called unjust enrichment?
Well, yeah, but the problem you're going to have with that is that's between the person whose car was hit and his own insurance company. And the chances are it didn't, and I'll tell you why it didn't, is first of all, he took your grandson to court. He got the judgment for the payment on the car. So that's the first sign that insurance, he didn't have insurance to fix his car. The second sign would be is that the insurance company has not contacted your grandson for payment either, because the insurance company would have contacted your grandson. It's going to be up to him to make sure that he pays the insurance company if he got the money for it, not your grandson to pay, but the person whose car was hit, that he reimbursed the insurance company. But the odds are he didn't, because if he did get money from an insurance company, by now, let's say it's Allstate. Allstate would have contacted your grandson, would have said, we want to make arrangements for payment. They would have talked about the deductible that the person had and said, you also have a deductible. They might have taken him to court, might not. But all that goes away. Everything goes away when there's a judgment entered in court. Because now when the person goes to court and says, I want to collect this money, they're right. telling the court that they're the rightful owner of that claim and that they own the claim. So, but we can help you on this. If we get your name and number, what we'll do is we'll give the person a call. And I don't know if your grandson has the money or if he wants to make a payment arrangement or what he wants to do.
Well, he doesn't have a job right now.
Okay.
Well, my take on the situation is Brad is exactly right. Once the judgment enters, that changes the ballgame. That's a judgment. The judgment is owed. The judgment can be collected, okay? Then, simultaneously, the Department of Motor Vehicles is telling your grandson he has to pay the money to get his license back. So, grandson has to pay the money. But another suggestion, if I were the grandson or representing the grandson, you got to pay. You got to pay the judgment. You got to pay and prove it to the Department of Motor Vehicles. But Eva, why doesn't somebody write a letter to this person's insurance company that got the judgment that his vehicle was damaged and say, I paid this? Okay, because then the insurance company would be advised that the person that owned the vehicle was paid.
Well,
how would I find out the name of the insurance company?
Well, that's why I'm going to want to get your name and number off the air.
Okay.
We'll call up and find out if there's an insurance company involved for you.
Oh, I appreciate that so much.
Now, your grandson needs to get what's called an SR-22, right?
SR-22, okay.
Yeah, okay. He needs to get an SR-22. And what needs to be done is that if we can get the other party to agree, we can enter into some kind of payment plan for him. And there's a form out there for a promissory note. It's called DR-2567. We can help you with that. We get that form put together that allows your grandson to enter into an agreement to pay the amount he owes. Get him into a payment plan. Now, you say he doesn't have a job. How old is your grandson?
He's going to be 21 in a few days.
Okay. So we got to talk to him about what arrangements he can make to pay for the damage to the car. Okay.
I am so grateful that you guys are there. I'm so impressed that you know so much.
Well, you're welcome. We appreciate your call. I'm going to put you on hold. You give your number to Kevin. We will call you this week, and we'll help you solve this problem, and we so much appreciate your call.
And we'll set up.
I listen to you guys every Saturday just to learn from you, and I just can't believe how helpful you can be. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So give your number to Kevin.
I will. Thank you.
All right. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we're here for you. We're going to try to get to all of your calls. Don't forget about the show that follows our show. That's the Consumer Real Estate Show, emphasis on consumer, Barry and Larry. And they are very knowledgeable, has a great show. I listen to them all the time. They're going to be walking into the studio pretty quick. Also, today at 10 o'clock, we have the one-hour Bell and Pollock Injury Show on KOA. That's 8:50 a.m. 1 hour long today, we're talking about trucking accidents. If you think it's just an ordinary accident, wrong. If you think, well, you can prove the truck jackknifed or it was speeding, and therefore, they're negligent, you need to look for a further underlying cause. The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Rules and Regulations, and you have to know what you're doing. Bell and Pollock, championsofthepeople.com. We'll be right back. Sweet, sweet Connie, and act. She had the whole show, and that's a natural fact. Here we go. I like it. I want some more of it. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show, 303-713-8255, the only show of its kind. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. You know, all of our podcasts are there. We do various injury shows. We do the one on KOA, starts at 10 o'clock today. This show is also on there if you ever want to listen to it. And we have cut sound bites out of the show because people have wanted to hear or have a certain part of a conversation we've had or some recitation that we're doing. Reporting on maybe Supreme Court cases. So we're glad to do that as well. Some people have requested the entire show. We've sent them the entire show. So we're here for you. Join us live. Now is Kay from Colorado Springs. Good morning, Kay.
Well, good morning. I love your show and your books, and I appreciate your radio time greatly.
Thank you.
What can we do for you?
Thank you. Well, I have been renting a condo for 10 years. My lease expired a while back. So now I'm month to month, and my owner has had some illness. He is older, I guess in his mid-80s. He's had a stroke, and he's fallen. And his kids, or his daughter's a realtor, and she wants to sell this place. And I would like to stay a little bit longer. And I don't know, they're pretty interested in selling. I'm willing to pay. I can pay, but I think they want to sell. So, what's your suggestion?
Okay. So how long? Well, so you're month to month. They can give you notice to vacate. Okay.
Does it have to be formal notice?
It doesn't. It just has to be notice. But it should. I mean, for proof wise and evidentiary wise, it should be in writing and notice. Have they given you notice, Kay?
She told me on the internet, on the email, that they wanted to get the place on the market as soon as possible.
Okay, but she didn't give you a notice of a date to terminate, a notice of date to vacate.
No.
Okay, so she hasn't. They haven't done it yet. Okay.
No.
Yes, they have to give you a specific date. Ideally, it would be in writing. Obviously, email would qualify. But yes, they have to give you notice. And if they give you notice and you can't get out, and I'm sorry that you're having to go through this. I've been there 10 years. But if you can't get out by the time of the notice, a reasonable landlord, you would call them up or contact them, and you could say, well, I can't be out by this date, but I can be out, what I'm making this up, in 2 months or something like mm-hmm. that. And most of them try to cooperate. I don't think you can call up and say, you know, I want another 6 months. That's not going to work. They want to sell the property. But
Just a couple of months, and I've got physical issues myself. I'm younger, older than I sound. I'll be 72 on Valentine's Day.
Mm. Well, you sound young to me, young lady. Okay, here's what we're going to do. I mean, we can help you. We can even make the call for you. Would you like that?
Yes, I would.
So we can call you and get the name of the people, call them up and say, this is what you'd like to do. And we'll be more than happy to do that. And so maybe we can get a specific date that accommodates both parties.
Is your rent due the first of every month?
Yes.
All right. So on a
through February.
Okay.
But I have knee issues and I can't hardly walk. They've done hyaluronic acid injections, and I can't hardly walk. I'm walking with a cane barely, and I'm just overwhelmed with a collection of stuff after you've lived 70 years.
Okay. Well, they have to give a notice, and they have to come out with a notice and either post it or hand it to you.
Okay.
And so every month that you're paying the lease, when you're paying it to begin with, then you're talking about them having to give a notice. And that notice, I believe now is 21 days. It used to be 7 days, and I believe now it's 21 days under a new bill that came into effect.
21 days to get out?
Well, yeah, and that's not very long. It used to be only 7 days, but I believe a bill was recently passed. When I say recently, I believe in sometime in 2017 that said it's now 21 days.
Okay, I have the money. I mean, I can give them extra money to stay here.
Right, and I can tell you this. I've dealt with many landlords, and they've been very nice, and they've said, okay, let's use a target date so you can start looking at other places and you can do what you need to do and get moved. But I've only once, twice. I can remember twice now in my career where I've dealt with landlords who back then it was a seven-day notice, and they gave a seven-day notice to a family that was a man and a wife and three kids. And they said, you're out in 7 days, and that guy had to scramble to try and find a place. And, if you don't do it, then they take you to court. You can kind of buy some time because they have to serve you, and then they have to take you to court, and they have to get a writ of restitution, and they have to get the sheriff to come out. So you can buy some time. And so you would still get some time because it can get delayed. But
I would hate to have a eviction on my record, though.
Yeah, and the person that landlord was so uncooperative, I couldn't believe it. But that most of the time, and because of the seven-day notice, it caused a lot of problems from month to month in exactly the thing you have, where you have a lease and it's going for a while, and then the lease runs out, and you continue with your landlord paying on a month-to-month without concern. And so I believe it's now 21 days, but we need to get your number so we can help you.
Oh, that'd be great. I have been paid 2 months ahead. Each check is for 2 months.
If you're paying 2 months ahead and they accept the rent, then you're safe for that entire time period. Now,
yes.
And that's where I'm going to want to talk to you, because if you paid for 2 months, then maybe you're not on a month-to-month. Now, let's look at your lease. See, we may be able to kick you over and say you're on a longer
You might have tenancy. a hybrid situation, Kay, but we can give you some peace of mind here. We can help you. And it sounds to me like the landlord is not going to be harsh about it. I mean, they gave you an overture. They didn't say vacate by X date. By this day. They said we want to start talking about it. It sounds like beginning of a dance card here, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we can get the information from you, call them up, and work something out. And then you'd be thinking, we're going to call you hopefully on Monday, but be thinking about a target date that you want to shoot for, okay?
Okay.
And
I want to be reasonable.
Yeah, and what's good for you. And also, when we call you, make sure you can tell us how far in advance you've paid the rent. That's going to be important.
Well, I paid 2 months ahead, so I sent them a check in December. That was for January and February. So the 60 days is up end of February.
We want to call him and talk to him and make sure everything's going to be okay, and just get some advice. And by the way, as I'm looking at it now, that bill, I don't know if that bill is passed yet for the 21 days, so they may still be on a 7-day window. So you still may be under a 7-day window rather than a 21-day window. So it's even more important that we have your number, we call the landlord, call the realtor, and just work something out and get you something worked out. Because now that I'm looking at it, I think that Senate bill has not gone through yet. So
you'll be thinking about a target date. Give us information on the payment of the rent. I think you just did. And we will give some calls and see if we can negotiate a date for you to leave peacefully, friendly, and everything's good.
Well, everything's been friendly.
And we can give you plenty of time to find someplace.
I think it's going to work out. Okay, I'm going to put you on hold, all right?
Thank you.
And we'll call you and we'll help you with your issue, okay?
Oh, you're wonderful.
Yes, okay. Ma'am. Thank you for calling the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Kevin, if you please take down Kay's information, you can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. You know, there's a button there you can hit as there's a show on what you need to know before you make the first phone call to the adjuster or before they call you. What do you need to know? What's going to happen? What can they ask you legitimately and properly? What you can do? How you can protect yourself? It's all there for you. We have a show on the youth concussion statute. That's very, very important. And, you know, the concussions years ago, no big deal. Now, huge deal. Big deal. You know, everybody's heard about the NFL. Everybody's heard about concussions, repeat concussions. But for youths, for younger people, a secondary concussion can be very, very devastating, can even be fatal. So you can get any of our books there. We have 6 books. You can download a free e-copy of our books. One's called Cowards of the Street, Hit and Run. One's called, our first book was called Don't Get Hurt in the Same in the Accident Twice. Once in the accident and again on the insurance claim. All of the myths are covered. We have a book on workers' compensation. We do workers' comp cases all over the state of Colorado. We have a book on that. And one of our most recent books is a definitive guideline of car insurance in Colorado. You can get them free. Bell and Pollock, we do it because we are your champions of the people.